Safety, dependability, and power. Chevy Silverado isn't happy unless the work is hard and the day is long. No wonder Silverado is America's number one best-selling retail pickup truck. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
There's so much to unpack. So many loud and angry voices, so much shouting. I don't think it's going to end soon, do you? And I don't think it's going to end well either. Nationally, anyone who disagrees with the left is automatically cast as a Trump lover, or a Nazi, a bigot, a hater, a misogynist. Even if you don't particularly like Trump, and I'm not a big fan of his drama or rhetoric, the cultural meme from the left is about condemning everyone who doesn't agree with them and painting them as somehow in Trump's lap and therefore evil. And if you're evil, if you're a Nazi, if you're a hater, a bigot, a racist, by logical extension of this angry left argument, you must be silenced. And you can have violence visited upon you. Emotional violence, physical violence, with the end result being people become isolated. And it won't end well. And there will be isolation. Oddly enough, I've been starting to watch a TV show, not that ridiculous APB Chicago Cop techno show, but another one. It's on the History Channel, and it's called Alone. Have you seen it? The isolation is compelling, and I'm trying to figure out why I'm drawn to this show. Perhaps it's because of my own isolation. Maybe that's what happens when you start putting your guard up. Anyway, that's part of this edition of the Chicago Way. And joining me as usual is my pie-making pal, WGN producer of the Rokon Show, Jeff Carlin, and also Christian McQuarrie of the Chicago Tribune's editorial board. And then later, the guy I'd hoped would have become president, Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky. There's a lot going on in Illinois, in the city, in the country. In Illinois, another Kennedy comes into politics. Chris Kennedy, running for governor. On what ticket exactly? I think we want to call it the Camelot ticket. Kind of like a knight in shining armor, ready to save Boss Madigan from Bruce Rauner's dragon. Does that sound weird? And how do you best respond to insulting letters from readers? We'll talk about that, too, on the Chicago Way.
See that new show, APB?
I read about it in a John Cass
Nothing column. Like watching coppers drink espresso from Demitasse cups right before, like during roll call, with their with their little pinky finger out.
Yeah.
And then you're wondering, Betty goes, who's going to wash those cups?
Of course.
You know, I said, it's not going to be a copper. Are
no.
you kidding?
I think that was my favorite sentence in your whole column.
We're rolling.
The little teacups. That's the visual of that.
That thing happened, the robbery happened across the street at that Starbucks, where people see the guy comes in, couple, man and woman come in, he demands water. Gets his water, drinks it. She starts fighting with him, and he starts screaming back at her. As he's doing that, everyone's looking at him. She starts screaming back at him, and then he grabs a purse and goes.
Oh.
So then I walk in, and there's the a reader recognized me. Oh, hey, blah, 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 John Cass, et cetera. Look at this. We had a robbery, and there's the evidence. I said, where's the evidence? And he said, the glass. It's still there, and the police just came in, and because it's North Michigan Avenue.
They were there in 2 minutes.
Two cops and a sergeant, and they're walking in, and these law students from Howard University had their purses stolen, women. So, of course, liberals mugged by reality right there. And everyone's in the drinking lattes. They're saying, there's the evidence. You can run the prints. Run the prints.
Right.
Run the prints. And the sergeant looked at me, kind of like made a deep sigh, and just kind of, you know what I mean? I felt so sorry for him. What was he supposed to say? CSI? No. We're not running the prints on a
purse snatcher?
This is how our day goes. Do you have any weird things happening?
Oh,
recently?
Gosh. Weird things. No, I can't say I've had any weird things happen lately like that where I've interrupted a crime. That's pretty exciting.
It was like the aftermath. John Cass, Kristen McQuarrie, Jeff Carlin, as usual. We're here on the Chicago Way. Later, we'll be talking to Senator Rand Paul, the one I wanted to be president of the United States, on the Constitution and this weird thing where I can't get it through liberal heads that they should support Gorsuch. Mm-hmm. Because if they're really worried about Donald Trump, they would want a conservative on the Supreme Court to check his powers.
Which, right. I mean, he's already spoken out against Trump.
Kind of like a little caving there.
A little bit. Right. But right, I mean, all this predicting it, if you choose a truly independent judge, they will surprise you, and I think we will be surprised.
And I think we should be having judges who understand the separation of powers.
Mm-hmm.
But as usual, if your guy's in, you don't want his powers unfettered. You want him to do everything to your opponents, and vice versa. Correct, Jeff Carlin?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
When we come to this thing now with all this immigration and visa and the decisions and all the court, who knows what'll happen. But one thing I know is happening. If, like me, I'm not a big Trump fan, but I'm not a liberal. And I kind of believe that we should have borders. And the statute that I read says the president has the rules, has the power to enforce the border and control who comes in and comes out. There's nothing ambiguous about that. However, Jeff Carlin and Kristen McQuarrie, the response is, if you are opposed to that, then you're supporting Trump. And by extension, you're a racist.
You're a bigot.
A fascist, a bigot, a hateful person, a deplorable, worse than deplorable. Even my liberal hero, who puts Hillary's pants legs on, pantsuits on one leg at a time, Liz Warren, was pretty wild with her commentary on Twitter, talking about Sessions and bigotry and hatred and racism, applying mm-hmm. that to the Attorney General. And I wondered, where are we as a country then if your opponents are Nazis and fascists and bigots and racists, then you don't really want to, you can't talk to them, can you?
There is no talking. Did John Arena, the Chicago alderman, did his Facebook post make its way back to you the other day?
Yes, it did.
So it read, I'm not ready to cede this country to the racist, classist, knuckle-dragging, and generally subhuman puddle of DNA that makes up the base of Trump supporters. We have made too much progress since scrubbing the Bush idiocy from the Oval Office. That is a sitting Chicago alderman saying that about Trump supporters. And you know who I think of whenever I hear people bashing people who voted for Trump? I think about one of my good friends whose parents came here from Italy. They didn't speak a word of English. Her dad worked probably like yours, 7 days a week, 15, 16 hours a day. In order to support his family.
Right.
Her mother worked at a high school cafeteria as a lunch lady until she finally was able to retire, you know, in her 60s. And they support stronger immigration laws, and they were Trump supporters, and she's a proud Trump supporter. And so when people like a sitting city councilman make such radical statements, they're so radical, yet they view Trump voters as radical. When if you look at, you know, my friend, for example, it's understandable to me why people support Trump. And I think I've said this to you before. I was not a Trump supporter, but I understand his people, and they're not deplorable. And what's deplorable is this conversation
right. but
is
even,
tolerated.
Even your admonishment now has no effect on that,
mm-mm.
right, on them. But here's what's bothering me. If you take that you're a racist, a bigot, and all that other stuff to its conclusion, you can commit violence on people like this. See, this is about creating a dialogue that ends with violence. the left violating those on that side. And the response will be somebody gets shot. The response will be with the kids with the black masks and all that, right? Coming up to people. Yeah, Jeff Carlin.
The black block.
The black block. If they come up to doing it in San Francisco is one thing. Doing it to some boys in Texas or Georgia or Mississippi or Arkansas or some, you know, let's say Lithuanians in Orland Park, there's a different response. All I know is this. The argument and the language of the left
sure.
is now violent. Mm-hmm. It is about dehumanizing anyone who opposes you. And once you do that, the logical extension of that is violence. And then what? Where are we going as a country?
Well, we talked a little bit about this off air, but what is the reaction? You, I know, elicit all kinds of reactions from the left through your writing. What are
you mean, like in the newsroom? Or
in the newsroom, yes.
My hostile work. It's a hostile work environment now. Hey, everybody. I want HR to know this.
We're hiding up in
the studio.
Oh,
by the way, I started a rumor. I got fired. Yeah.
You started a rumor that
I had to file my ethics statement.
Uh-huh.
And I kept forgetting.
Yes.
You know, like all the deals I have, which I don't have.
Right. All that side money.
Yeah, side money I don't have.
Zero. Right.
No contract, no nothing. Just high wire act every day, just like everybody else here. And, so I went down to HR to finish it, and people said, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "Oh, I got fired."
You don't, because if you're just even seen with the HR
if
people around
right?
here, you, rumors.
Right?
Oh yeah.
Here's the thing, and I want to get into the politics with you guys, but here's something. I got into, you know, I get a lot of email from people, and usually it's "You suck, go die," or "You're not Royko." Or "Shut up," or "You're not Hupke or Zorn," right? "Shut up, let them talk." Okay, fine. That's how they feel. Or it's, but then sometimes I'll respond. The two responses are, if people are really insulting, it's, "I hear a little doggy barking, so keep barking, little doggy," and that gets them crazy. The other one is, I actually engaged, you know, "Thank you for writing. I feel this way. You feel that way. Why do you feel this way?" Back and forth. So I get an email from someone the other day saying, "Can you please make sure that my letter gets published because I included all this stuff we talked about?" And I thought, what? Anything I write to somebody, they're going to use or blind CC me and send it to their friends. You know what I mean? And I'm almost of the point now where I can respond on Facebook because it's out there. But email, sometimes now I'm wondering, should I even, because of these weasels, should I even email people back? What do you think?
Well, as long as you're not calling them fascist Nazis and, I mean, not what the liberals are
no,
doing.
No, that's, that's what I am.
Right. No, I know.
But a misogynist, too.
Right, it's just important. Oh, yeah. The double standard there. That if you have a sitting alderman who uses that language in public, and then you get someone, you know, go back and forth in a debate of politics or whatever, and they use it against you or try to make you know,
we're
oh,
just
man,
to take
and
your,
man,
yeah,
that's,
yeah,
that's trying to goad you into.
What do you, should I not respond?
No,
what do you do,
I keep
Chris?
Responding.
It depends on my mood. Sometimes I do the same thing because I'm not going to back down. I'm not going to let people send me racist rants, call me the C word. But I usually try to keep it short.
Cantankerous?
No.
Different one. Uh-oh. It's much shorter.
Oh, my
Four
bad.
Letters.
Got it.
I get the C word too.
Right. Well, I have a copy
to me,
of
C-U-K. It's like an alt-right thing because I'm not right-wing enough for them.
There, we have
Rogue
one, gets that too.
We have one fan who writes to both of us, and he is so foul-mouthed that I think maybe they finally blocked him. But I usually, it's a couple of my favorites, especially if it's like a grown man writing me and calling me the C word. I love to just, you know, "You kiss your mom with that mouth?"
Yeah.
See, I say, do you kiss your dog with that mouth? But yeah.
I get
that.
We get the calls from you know, on the radio station. So I'm I have the person on, you know, with me, and they're back and forth.
You're the one that's on the front line taking all the crap that's supposed to go to Roe.
Right, exactly. So I take that crap, and I the same thing, you know, we'll get called something awful, or I'll get called something awful, and, you know, and I'm saying, oh, I bet your mother's very proud that you called radio stations and yell at people you don't even know. Must be so proud of you. And they're like, how dare you bring my mother in this? You blank.
People hate when you bring the mother
in.
But it's sort of, I had one guy actually respond to me the next day and apologize for being so crude.
You did.
After I did the dropped the mom line. But that I also, it also drives me nuts when people, especially on the left, they're supposed to be so progressive and pro woman and everything. Yeah. They question my judgment because I'm a woman. And that's, you know, they look at my picture and maybe they think I'm younger than I am or something. But I love to throw it back at them. Like, well, what a sexist position you're coming from.
Oh, because you're responding to my looks.
Right. Or that.
Which is what I tell women readers all the time. Don't you dare talk about my hair.
Do they, no. though? You do have
They do hair. Say that I have senatorial hair. That's
you
what
do.
Betty says.
I mean, did it used to be darker?
It was darker. Unlike many in the media, I don't dye it.
Yeah.
That's what, my rule now. Is if a guy dyes his hair, I kind of lose credibility to me.
Yeah.
Should I not? I got friends who dye their hair. I really like them.
Do you? Men. See, I don't know any men who dye their hair.
Good.
Lots of women.
Don't think about
but
it.
But I don't know if any men.
Women like should do whatever they want, and including wear furs. If you want to wear furs, be my guest.
Heck yeah.
Right?
We see them all. I love seeing the women up and down Michigan Avenue with, you know, they're just running to the grocery store. They might even have tennis shoes on, but they've got this long, luxurious fur, walking their dogs, picking up dog poop in their fancy coats.
That's what Jeff. Yeah, Jeff and I should start wearing fur jackets.
That's Chet Kopecky. That's Chet Kopecky's world.
Oh, man.
Let him have that. He's got that cornered.
Yeah. All right. So should we respond? I just think that people will take what I write to them. It's not even edited. I've got a column going. I've got another one planned. I've got interviews to do. I've got all this stuff in my head, mm-hmm. and I'm just blasting stuff back. And then they take that stuff and they send it out as if they won a victory by pissing me off.
Yeah, maybe.
I just don't feel like maybe I should go back to the paper thing with pens and just respond to people who write me. I got a stack of letters as high as my head, maybe almost as big as my head on my desk. And I should just start
writing.
I don't know.
Back.
And not do the email thing. It's just so.
There's probably no good answer, but don't engage with the trolls.
I know. And I
So I kind of ignore, you know, Capital Facts, the blog, loves to post. I don't know that anybody gets more criticism or from that blog than I do, reporter wise. They post my, and Rich Miller, who runs it, I think he gets a kick out of kicking me around. But I never engage because you try to defend yourself. You try to reach out.
To who, though? To a bunch of staffers that work for Mike Madigan and lobbyists who will suck up to Jimmy DeLeo. I mean, are those the people? And John
yes.
Cullerton
it's
and
a little
all
vacuum.
Deals.
It's a little tiny vacuum
right.
of one-way street thinking.
Come on, man. Don't even engage them. But when you have a reader that engages you and then tells you, I'm sending this to the editor as part of our exchange, his name was Mark, spelled with a C. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm just thinking, man,
why did I do that? Is that what
I don't know,
you're
like,
thinking?
Man, like, are you like so either competitive? Because people who write me often are better writers, better thinkers, better human beings, better everything than me. That's the sense.
Not better cooks, though.
Not better cooks of lamb shanks, for sure.
yeah,
okay. We'll have to talk about that on the next show,
yeah.
right? Because we're going to have the Betty's making the lamb shanks for these two. And we'll see. Jeff's making
really
a pie.
Excited.
Mm-hmm. Betty has a savory pie called spanakopita.
I was just going to bring booze.
That's yeah, bring
what
booze.
I'm good
yeah,
for.
Good.
Yeah, I like to
bring
make salads, too.
Bring a bottle of wine
too,
or something, a salad. We'll have salad.
Okay, I'll bring booze.
So, you know. And
that's what my mom always assigns me for Thanksgiving. She asks my sisters to make a dish, she knows better, so she just tells me to bring.
Is Jeff going to just whip out his recorder and do another blog or another Chicago-y from the
Maybe.
House?
Maybe. That
over
would be
dinner?
Fun.
Sure.
You can hear Betty and all our spouses talk about us like, you know, what jerks we are. Not that Betty would ever say that publicly.
But they know the real us.
They know the real us, right?
That's true. Yeah.
Absolutely. The I'm not eating bread, but can I have a piece, a little gelato now? You know,
right? You're on a diet.
I'm on a diet, but can I have some gelato?
Yeah.
Why can't I have gelato, honey?
I've been on a diet since I did the whole New Year's Eve. This is it. I hate it.
I got one for you.
What?
Instead of going on a diet, why don't we call the History Channel and get dropped off in Patagonia in little and have to survive there for 85 days?
Just like, eat bugs.
I've been watching this show called Alone.
Oh.
Oh, my God. It is like total reality TV, but without, like, it's not Survivor where you're playing popular girl.
Are people naked? Is this
That's
the show?
Not the naked.
Oh, there is a naked and alone.
I like that one, too.
Version.
But this one's real. This is real Survivor. We drop you on the, and then the winner, whoever lasts the longest, isolation.
Oh, my gosh.
John, they have a version of this in Russia, and they say nothing is off the table, including murder.
So it's like Hunger Games.
It's exactly Hunger Games. They drop you off in the middle of Siberia, and it's like, okay, go ahead. And you have to make it back to Moscow or wherever it is. And you have to do it however you can, however you need.
The first one gets wins?
Yeah. And so, no, it doesn't matter.
You can kill your...
You can kill somebody.
Like, is it on TV?
I'm assuming. I mean, I don't know
what else.
Let's
watch it.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. What is happening to our world?
Yeah, that's...
I saw a movie with that with Stone Cold Steve Austin. Yeah.
What?
I just confessed. All right. Did I confess I play video games? Yeah. Did I also the Division? That's what
I'm
playing now.
Do you really play video games?
Oh yeah, I'm not a drinker. I mean, I have like one drink occasionally in the late afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
But
video games. You
but I'll play it to chill. You know, to just
I'm
to
with
get,
you, John.
Get out of
I'm
my head.
You. It's mindless, but it's
you
just...
too.
I got to ask you guys a question about politics because really, I know people tune in for this. We've got a Kennedy running for governor. And I look in the paper and I see a picture of Robert Kennedy and his wife and the little baby, who's now the baby who's running for governor in Illinois. And I'm thinking, I called an editor. I said, who put this picture in the paper? I mean, what are we going to have next? Camelot?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is this? I mean,
that's how they win.
Oh.
Kennedy's win. So I think that's why Bruce Rauner's Republican Party, the Illinois Republican Party, which he helps fund, is already, as soon as these guys announced, they're out with commercials, with propaganda against J.B. Pritzker. He's another trust fund baby. So we have two trust fund
I know, they're
babies
against
running.
J.B., right? He's a rich guy, but they're against him.
Well, the Republican Party, it's just they're... You know, they've got their campaign cycle ginned up, and anytime somebody announces, they are ready. Which I guess you have to be in the state. You know, I don't like the constant campaigning, but here we are. What I love is Pat Quinn basically ran for his entire run against Bruce Rauner was against Bruce Rauner's money. They made fun of his, you know, his watch. They
lawn.
Called him King Midas.
Van.
Billionaire Bruce.
It's stupid, Van. It really was stupid. Come on.
His camper van.
Yeah.
I mean, everywhere he went,
yeah.
Everywhere Bruce Rauner went, it was all about his money. Because, you know, if you're on the left, money's bad, success is bad.
Money's only good if Mike Madigan gives it to you.
Well, right. You think Mike Madigan isn't a millionaire running his
taxes? I think multimillionaire.
Everybody forgets that.
You know what? I can envision Mike Madigan having a castle in Ireland someplace.
He might.
Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. I'm just envisioning.
So what are,
if you can envision this, a castle in Ireland for Mike Madigan, and you're listening, you might want to email me, jscass@chicagotribune.com. Go on.
There you go. Kristen. So what is the left going to do this time? Two of their candidates and a potential nominee, also wealthy. And you could even argue, I wrote a little bit about this, and I had some people emailing me. At least Bruce Rauner made his money. You know, he came from a upper middle class family. I think he went to New Trier, maybe. So he
went to Dartmouth.
Yeah. I mean, he certainly lived a charmed life.
Drove across the country with his buddies through Canada when he was a senior. and got chased by a bear.
No.
One day I'm going to have him on, and he's going to tell that story.
Oh, that'd be great.
If Bruce Rauner's listening, I want to hear the bear story.
I do, too.
Running around a car while his friends are sleeping in the car.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Go on.
So what are they going to – what are Democrats going to say? How are they going to take down Bruce Rauner's wealth when they have two trust fund babies? I is it going to be like Privilege Pritzker, or what can we say about Kennedy? Because
if you're going to put a picture of, if we're going to run pictures of like Camelot, mm-hmm. right? Are mm-hmm. we going to run pictures of Marilyn Monroe? I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Oh, did I just touch the third rail? Oh, how dare you, John Cass.
A lot of our news coverage often refers to Rauner's money. So I just hope it gets equal treatment.
The Republicans
can't. All the self-funding, and Bruce Rauner wrote himself a big old check. I hope we see as much coverage.
There isn't a story that runs about him, and especially in this state, that isn't billionaire governor Bruce Rauner, ruins middle class lives or whatever it is. And
that is right out of the Steve Brown. It's almost as if I think I'm going to start. Here's what we need to do. Everybody listening, I want you to take a sheet of tinfoil, and I want you to make a little conical hat like Tom Terrific used to wear in the cartoons, or like they did on Signs, the great movie with mm-hmm. Mel Gibson, mm-hmm. the discredited Mel Gibson. And we will give these to the reporters who cover Springfield so they could put them on their heads so that Steve Brown's wizard powers can't enter their brain. Because every time I read Rauner's The Republic, anytime I read Republican hyphen, self-funded almost exclusively by Bruce Rauner, hyphen. No? Okay, no one wants to touch that? Okay. I guess I made
no, wizard, I just,
wizard
I just
powers.
More,
yeah.
more, I lost more friends in the newsroom, but I'm a lonely guy anyway. I really, you know what? Kristen, I have to say, I feel lonely.
You do?
Yeah.
Just lately or always?
This whole, I wanted Rand Paul on the show today because partly what I think he might give some interesting insights. I hope he does. But also, there was a little thing inside my head, like, get him on so you can say that this is your guy, because I'm...
You should ask him if he's lonely.
I don't know. I'm just... It's like an isolation thing.
Mm-hmm. It is.
I'm just tired of it. It's like, it was Edgar, all the Edgar buddies, Thompson buddies, the Daily Peep, all that. It's gotten to the point where the callous started with Daily, Edgar, Thompson. The Danny Hastert thing, there's like a callus that I've got on me, almost. Like I can't even feel it. It's like numbness. Like I can't even get, like I don't care anymore. Like screw you guys. I'll just do my thing. It's, I don't know.
It does. I mean.
Probably talking too much. What do you think, Kristen? Talking too much?
No, you're not. I think a couple things. One, living in this environment, in this city where everyone does, they just don't think the way that we do. They don't. They don't have the same policy positions. They don't think that, the way to move the state forward is the same way that we do. So that's
liberty, low taxes, freedom.
Right.
Right.
Smaller government. They want more government. They want more money. They need more resources. All right. of the problems of the schools and the city would be solved if we just had more money. People just do think differently than we do on issues like that. So it's very isolating. And also, because you are a columnist and you're putting yourself out there all the time and you're attaching your name to your thoughts, you do get attacked more. And it does change you as a human being. It certainly has changed me. I am very much more hardened than I was just to criticism and it.
But
Kristen,
I never wanted to be. I mean, one thing I've thought, because you write, you not only write political stuff. Occasionally you write other stuff, personal. I don't want to say butterflies, like John Cass is a butterfly, okay? But we do have, I know, right? Big fat butterfly with hair on its back.
He
likes lamb shanks. But there's like antenna for a writer. And it has to be up all the time. And you pull things in, feelings, thoughts, associations. And you do all that, and to protect yourself, you withdraw that. To protect yourself emotionally, you withdraw that, and you get, oh, Cass, you think you're so tough. I really don't. You know this. I don't act like I don't act like a tough guy, do I? Really? Mm-hmm.
No, you're
but it's
not.
Like that's a thing. Cass is so tough. He thinks he's so tough. And after a while, what makes you able to see humanity and experience it is like walled off by this callus.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, it's really, sometimes it gets to me.
Mm-hmm.
Am I acting like a baby?
No, it's hard to be vulnerable. I mean, just by writing a column, you're kind of making yourself vulnerable.
You can just imagine these jerks out there listening to this laughing their ass off. And I don't want to give them any of that, you know? It's just a thing, like you. You write stuff, you get criticized, you get hardened as a result. It's a natural thing. And we're not saying that people shouldn't criticize us because that's part of the game. That's what we do.
Right.
But there's a certain thing. I think maybe all the personal stuff and the other stuff, it kind of, I don't want to be isolated. I don't want to be walled off emotionally because that's not good for a writer. You have to break. So then the result is you break through that wall or the callus. And you still get kicked. And after a while, you just, I don't know, maybe I need a vacation.
You do need a vacation. I always resort to, when I have those moments of feeling isolated, that, you know, I'm in a room with people and I'm like, oh my gosh, what?
Right.
Am I really the crazy one? I mean, I do have those moments.
Am I mad?
Am I mad? You know, go especially around the holidays, like going to Christmas parties, I found myself not going to things because I didn't want to have to get into a discussion with somebody about politics or what. And so then you're walled off in that way too. But, you know, Mark Twain, whenever you find yourself on the side of the majority, it's time to pause and reflect.
Right.
That sustains me sometimes. It's okay to be the little butterfly.
That's me.
Banging on the outside of the glass and trying to make change. It comes from a good place.
Here's the thing about Kristen. She doesn't have to say, Cass, put your big boy pants on and grow the bleep up. She says this in a kind way, and it helps. So thanks.
Sure.
Weird, huh?
That'll I can't be believe $75.
My God, is this like a doctor? Am I doing like some Dr. Phil Oprah crap right now? Kinda. Sorry, everybody.
A little bit, but it's all right. It's cathartic.
It's
2017 is going to be a rough year.
Oh,
you know?
It's been a rough year since 98. I mean, look, you've got all the daily people, right? And all the other ones, the Combine Boys and everything, they're experts at this. Constantly shooting, knowing where to go. You have to watch not only what you do, what your family does. You have to protect them. Not that anyone's hurting them, but people will use whatever they can to pull your skin off.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, I feel like going to the call of the History Channel and going up there to Patagonia. Live for 86 days. What do you think? I could lose some weight, right? Definitely.
That'd be one way.
Eating fish every other day.
I take great pleasure now in blocking people on Twitter who harass me. I used to think,
freedom of speech.
I had to put up, yes, and like you said, my job is to bring a hammer down on public officials and stuff. So I have to be able to take the hammer. I'll take it. I'll take your criticism if it's policy-based and this or that, but they needle you, and a lot of them are anonymous accounts.
That's the thing.
And
cowards.
They're cowards. I have to put my name next to everything I do. And so now I just block them, and it's so refreshing because I do still want to interact on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
I do get a lot of my news, so it's not like I want to completely, shut my account down. But I have no problem just hitting that block button if it's repetitive and, hurtful. That's what I do.
All right, I want to assess now that I actually slapped myself in the face twice.
I threw some cold water.
Throw some cold water on me. Everything. Look, I've got the greatest job in the world. I do, and I love it, and I'll keep doing it until I die. And I don't plan on changing the way I act or the way I'm going to be. And I like it when people criticize what I'm writing because that's part of the game. I do it to them. So there's no question about that. Sometimes you get tired. Maybe it's just, you know, sometimes you get a little softened up and you just got to, you know, grow up and keep going. And that's what I'm going to do. Okay. So Jeff, don't freak out. This is not some Oprah moment.
Deep thoughts with Deep John. Deep
thoughts. Oh, really?
Are we all getting a new car after this episode?
Just you get a therapy session. You get a therapy session.
The fellow I'd hoped would become president of the United States is the Republican senator from Kentucky, Rand Paul. He leans libertarian, and so do I, and he'd read a column I'd written recently about the need for conservative originalists on the Supreme Court. Why? So they could protect the balance of power and check the impulses of an ever-growing imperial presidency. Right now, you hear liberals screaming and raging about Trump and his reach for power. They didn't scream and rage when Barack Obama was doing it. And I wonder, why can't Democrats see the need for a conservative on the court? Are they just blind, or are they lost in their tribal partisan rage? And I ask him about this, foreign policy, and tasty Kentucky bourbon, the Chicago way.
Thanks for having me.
I know you're very busy with your declaration of war on the neocons. Which
you interpreted that pretty well correctly.
It's one of the things that I think may have crimped your style as you were breaking out in the Republican primary. It was the same.
You know,
the
it's
same
kind
dynamic.
Of interesting. You know, I don't know exactly, and you know, we can always look back in hindsight and say, well, why didn't we, you know, get going with a bigger head of steam in the presidential campaign? But the interesting thing is, some of the things Trump has said have been against sort of the worldview of the neocons, and he was still able to get the nomination. You know, he said nation building's a mistake, regime change a mistake, Iraq war was a mistake. But he had a bigger megaphone. You know, he was getting about 25 times more coverage than all the rest of us combined. So in some ways, we didn't get a chance. I'm not sure the message was rejected so much, my message, other than that it was drowned out by a much louder message.
That's what happens when you're Trump and you have Fox News at your back. But listen, we are talking to Senator Rand Paul, Kentucky, the candidate I had wanted to be president of the United States, a man who cares about the Constitution. You're not part of the Republican establishment, clearly, not of the McCain-Lindsey Graham let's-go-to-war party, and you're not really beloved by the Democrats. Are you perhaps one of the loneliest men there on Capitol Hill?
Sometimes I am the odd man out, but it's interesting. You can either be everybody's enemy or perhaps you're everyone's friend some of the time. And I guess I prefer to look at it as everyone's friend some of the time. So, for example, Chris Murphy's one of the more progressive members of the Democrat caucus in the Senate, and yet he and I worked together on trying to end arms sales to Saudi Arabia to bomb civilians in Yemen. Ron Wyden is a progressive Democrat from Oregon who I work with on trying to curb the powers of the NSA and protect American privacy. Cory Booker is a progressive Democrat from New Jersey and I've worked with on criminal justice reform. But then at the same time, I've also worked with conservative members like Mike Lee and Ted Cruz on economic issues or lower taxes or less government regulation.
Senator Paul, let's go over your complaints about the Trump administration seeking to bring on one of the leading neocons, Elliot Abrams, back into the administration after Trump campaigned on the issue of the Iraq war was terrible, we don't want to be nation builders, and now he's reaching out and bringing a neocon back who hated him, or at least despised him publicly. What are your views on this, and what kind of blowback are you getting?
One of Elliot Abrams' statements during the campaign was that the chair that Washington and Lincoln sat in, Trump is not fit to sit in. And so he was very anti-Trump, but he was also very anti what Trump was saying. When Trump would say that we need to concentrate on some problems we have here at home, that we don't have enough money to do nation building abroad, Elliot Abrams was very critical of that and said he was wrong. When Trump would say the Iraq war was a mistake, Elliot Abrams, who was one of the key architects of the Iraq war, would disagree as well. So I think it would be a mistake to bring someone who basically disagrees with many of the good aspects of what Trump said about foreign policy. And I hope it won't happen, but it is a somewhat unnerving that he would be considered for a post since he was, I think viscerally and loudly opposed to most of what Trump brought that was change in the regard with regards to foreign policy.
What kind of blowback are you getting from the neocons and from the Trump administration on this?
You know, I don't think I'm going to be invited to their Christmas party next year. It's, but it's sort of been that way from the very beginning. I've been, unafraid to say that we need to have a foreign policy that is constitutional, that separates the powers, that understands that our founding fathers said that Congress shall initiate war, Congress shall declare war. And that's one of my biggest pet peeves right now is that, we're at war in Yemen. Nobody's even talking about it. We did an armed, manned raid that was a disaster and in all likelihood will create more terrorists than it killed. We've been supplying bombs to Saudi Arabia. They dropped bombs and killed 150 people at a funeral procession and wounded 500. And you can just imagine the repercussions of all of the relatives of those wounded and killed in a funeral procession. They don't get a warm, fuzzy feeling for Saudi Arabia or for the U.S. that supplied the bombs. Now, unfortunately, recently the raid was approved by President Trump, and then so was he renewed some arms that at the very end President Obama got cold feet on sending them smart bombs, and now it looks like that's going to be renewed as well. So, I will support Trump when he is against regulations and when he's for balancing the budget or lower taxes, but when he strays and when he's for a foreign policy that endangers or threatens to get us involved in more war in the Middle East, I'll have to oppose him.
The McCain-Graham people on that side of the Republican Party, what many of us call the War Party, are pushing for more NATO, expanded NATO, and leveraging Vladimir Putin and Russia. Are you for an expansion of NATO, the way they're doing it?
No, I think it's a mistake, and I think one of the things that after we were fortunate with the Cold War ending, that we pushed a little too hard with putting everybody in NATO all the way up to the borders of Russia. A lot of Americans don't realize, and I'm not justifying, Putin or Russia invading the territorial integrity of other countries, but a lot of people don't realize that Crimea was historically part of Russia, not Ukraine. And so there are a lot of things that we need to decide what we have the capability of shaping as far as outcome. And what I would say is that we should neither call, Putin names, either names that are basically killer, but we should also not be naive enough to say that he's our best friend. I'd say he's an adversary, and we should treat him as such, but we should also look for areas to try to lessen the animosity between our countries. One of the best introductions recently during the nomination battle was Sam Nunn, who introduced Rex Tillerson, and he said, you know what, during the worst of the Cold War, when Russia was doing terrible things and fighting proxy wars around the globe, we still talk to them. And the dialogue is incredibly important, and there always has to be some aspect of foreign policy or the State Department that's involved in diplomacy, even with bad actors around the globe, to try to lessen the chance of having a nuclear war. And I think that's a profound statement.
Switching to domestic policy for a second and politics, what we're seeing what I'm seeing on the Democratic side, the angry, hard Democratic left using theater and so forth to try to wrest control of the Democratic Party apparatus. I find they're lagging behind the Republican Party about a couple of years, but similar dynamics, it seems to me, outsiders, insiders. How do you see all this on the other side of the aisle?
There's a lot of petulance going on, and unless they can make it more about issues and less about petulance, they're going to struggle because, I think the personal attacks and innuendo are really not going to really – it's working some with their base, but I think ultimately they need to come up with ideological positions and issues that they can champion more than this. And we're going to get beyond this. But the thing is, if they focus all of their wrath on the Supreme Court nominee that's going to come forward, it's going to be hard to explain to the American people why they unanimously voted for him just a few years ago for the second highest court in the land, and somehow their opinion has changed. Because I think the one thing about Gorsuch is that when you look at his record, it's a pretty, one of originalism, one of fidelity to the Constitution, but also a somewhat dispassionate view that justices should not be legislators, and that on social questions of the day and social issues, we should try to, you know, let legislatures and states and localities figure these answers out that are very contentious. I think it's going to be difficult, and I appreciated the article, I believe, that you wrote talking about how believing in the separation of powers should be exactly what they're for, because that means that the executive branch doesn't get to act unilaterally and on its own if you have justices who actually believe in the separation of powers.
Is that argument, not my argument, but the general argument about separation of powers and the political pendulum that swings left and right across this country, our founders understood that and were concerned about that. Is that thing penetrating on the left, or are they screaming so loudly that they don't want their people to hear it?
I think the problem here among both parties is that they tend to believe in the separation of powers and restraint from the executive only when the opposite party is in the White House. So right now, I think the Democrats will improve, but I tried to get them to rally to my side in saying that President Obama had used the executive order too much. Well, we got almost no support. Now that there's a president that they dislike, I think there will be newfound love for separation of powers. Now, there are a few that are better at this, and, you know, the few that are consistent, and particularly, you know, my work with Senator Wyden, I think he is a consistent advocate that the legislature needs to take back this power, that the people need to know more about what's going on in secret. And this is one of the points that I've been making and have made with Abrams' nomination and others, is that we have too many secrets. We have secret wars going on. Most of the things are funded in secret. The weapons are done in secret. And most members of Congress are not allowed to know this. When they started doing bulk collection of all of our phone records, what Edward Snowden revealed, most members of Congress did not know this. And people cried, oh, you had to have known. They don't tell us. There are 8 members of Congress that are told most of the secrets that go on in our country, and the rest of us are left in the dark, and so are the American people. So entire wars can be fought covertly through the CIA with no knowledge by members of Congress or the public, and that was the reason I ended up voting against the CIA director as well, is that I think we need more oversight of the intelligence community, not less.
How's the Gorsuch nomination thing going to go? Are the Republicans going to put Senate Democrats who were in Trump, who are running in Trump states, on the spot? How's it going to work out, do you think, long term?
You know, I think what is unknown is will they take a stand, like a final stand on this, and say we will not vote for this nominee, even though they voted unanimously for him before? I'm not so sure they can pass sort of the laugh test on that. If they think they can, there's going to be some blowback to them for voting for him one time and now saying they'll vote against him, you know, for, you know, the highest court in the land. So we'll see what happens on that. I do think Trump will not stay in Washington. I think he will travel the country promoting both causes he believes in and people he believes in. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him showing up in places like West Virginia, Montana, North Dakota, where you have senators coming up the next time, and he won by 30 and 40 points, and you have Democrat senators in those states. So I think he will take it on the road and take the case to the American people. We'll see what happens. I don't know what the outcome will be. I do suspect in the end that Gorsuch will be on the Supreme Court, and I'm going to do what I can to get him there because I think he's a great pick.
Is it fair to say in closing that Senator Rand Paul and Donald Trump are not an item anymore?
Well, I would say
in other words, is this Abrams thing a way, not that you would use something as a pretext to break, but that this is a break between you and the administration?
You know, I don't think it represents a break because I think people know where I am on this, and we try to be vocal in advance because I think once you get a nomination, the fight gets even more bitter. But if you watch my appearances on national television, I actually try to be complimentary of the president whenever I can, whenever I agree with him. I am a glasses half full kind of guy, and so I don't purposely stake out to challenge the president of my own party. I will. And I think the foreign policy, who he picks for this position, is very important. And so I'm going to oppose Abrams if he's picked. but I still have hope that he won't be picked. You know, I staked out a position early on, but ended up supporting Tillerson because I think Tillerson is a more realistic voice, more of a foreign policy realism than some of the other possible picks for the Secretary of State. And I've been pleased, actually. I don't know what will happen, but my initial impression is that I think he will be better than many of the other picks. And so I'm rattling the cages, hoping that the pick for his chief deputy will be someone more in line with, you know, less intervention abroad and paying attention to some concerns we have here at home.
Senator Paul, we're going to let you go, but I have to ask you, as you know, since Illinois is so close to Kentucky, when you say you're a glass half full man, what kind of bourbon? Kentucky bourbon goes in that glass of yours.
Well, you know, you would get me impeached from office if I chose one bourbon over the other, but I will make sure that your listeners know that all bourbon has to come from Kentucky if it wants to be called bourbon. And so we're very proud of our bourbon trade, and it's grown. And, you know, we probably have 20 or 30 different varieties of bourbon now. We have a bourbon trail, and we welcome people from Chicago to come on down and sample our bourbon.
And you're welcome to come up here anytime and watch Rahm Emanuel self-destruct. Okay.
That's bad enough from a distance. I don't think I want to see that up close.
All right. Thank you very much, Senator.
Thanks, sir.
Thanks, John. Bye. This has been another edition of the Chicago Way. Christian McQuarrie of the editorial board, Jeff Carlin of the Rokon Show, John Cass, Rand Paul and his bourbon. And next time you hear from us, we'll be eating Jeff Carlin's mixed berry pie. See ya.